All right, what's up,
Pete?
This is a great way to start our second podcast. What's up, everybody? I'm Philip.
I'm Tyler.
And this is
Acceptable
Accuracy Podcast.
Oh my gosh, you're so cheesy.
This is the Acceptable Accuracy Podcast. Okay, so we were challenged at the beginning of this episode by our guest to say it in tandem. So that's just what
happened. I'm going to give you a cheese head. That's what I'm going to do for Christmas.
But I don't live in Wisconsin. Well, my relatives do. My in-laws do. Okay. Anyway, today's topic is
conceal carry, bro.
Conceal carry, bro. I don't know what a conceal carry is, bro. We're going to talk about it.
Does that mean broettes cannot conceal carry?
You're not supposed to talk yet. We didn't introduce
you. Yeah, we haven't introduced you. Shh. All right. But first, let's introduce our guest, Brian.
I'm good? Okay. Hi.
Say hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Nice. Okay. Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the subject. Who are you? What do you do? And why are we talking to you today?
Well, I'm a truck driver.
Oh, nice.
That's what I do, but yeah. I carry guns a lot. Because yeah, I have a really cool boss, and he doesn't care if I carry. So it's pretty awesome.
What got you into, like, your firearms journey? Like, what really?
So actually, funny enough, when I was a kid, I was terrified of guns.
Oh.
Because when I was really little, my stepdad had me shoot a 12-gauge slug.
Yeah.
And I remember shooting that, and I was little enough that I remember doing a backflip.
Oh.
Like, I was teeny tiny.
That is, like, one of my biggest pet peeves. Like, seeing all these videos of, like, these macho, these guys who think they're macho dudes.
Right.
And they give it to, like, their girlfriends or their kids. The first gun they shoot, what is it?
Revolver.
Well, I was thinking a 12-gauge. I was thinking a 12-gauge slug. And I'm like, guess what? That person is now going to be terrified of guns, will never trust you again. Or will be they'll have trust issues now, and they don't want to touch a gun again because this dude thought it was funny to play with guns like
that. As a grown man, I would love to punch someone in the face if I ever saw him doing it, but I have not run into that, so luckily.
Maybe we should do a podcast episode at some point of, like, how to introduce people into
shooting. Be really cool.
Right, like, what's the best way to introduce
them? Well, because, like, if you're the gun guy, like, everyone comes to you, or you'll get the call, like, hey, I got a cousin, aunt, sister, Susan, that Susan wants to shoot.
It's always a Susan.
Yeah. Can't trust the Susan. Yep.
This is why I have to borrow Phillips 22, because I still don't own
No, so, but yeah, so that kind of, I was very gun shy. And my dad actually ended up getting an AR-15, and I remember he had me shoot that. And I remember it was loud when I watched him shoot. I'm like, dude, that's crazy. I'm 10 at this point.
Yeah.
So years had gone by since the incident with the 12-gauge. But he had me shoot it. And the first time I shot it, I was literally like, bang. And I think I shot the dirt 3 feet in front of me.
I believe it.
But there was no recoil. I'm like, this is cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then he started teaching me, like, fundamentals of, you know, marksmanship, things like that. Because my dad's really, really big into precision shooting.
Can I ask you a question about the AR-15?
What's up?
Was it as heavy as 10 boxes?
It was, and the recoil
was
like being kicked by
a mule.
Santa Claus.
Okay, let's move Santa Claus.
Because he's chunky.
Mm-hmm. Well, chunky.
Yeah. No, it was really light recoil. It was fun. But again, teaching, you know, the marksmanship fundamentals, things like that. And within a fairly short time, he had a shooting quarters at 100 yards.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's pretty good. Fun. That's a... Does he still have the AR? Because that's pretty good.
No, that one he ended up selling.
Oh, that's too bad.
That's crazy. Wow.
So, Brian, one of the reasons we brought you on today was you are a prolific carrier, but you are also a prolific firearms owner. I think at one point you mentioned that you were, like, how many firearms did you have at one point?
Well, handguns specifically, before I bought a semi, I had 100. Well, just over 100.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
That's crazy.
Yeah, wow. I ended up having to sell them to fix said semi. So anyone listening, don't buy a semi. Terrible idea.
So one of the reasons why I specifically wanted to have you on today was because, not because you have a lot of guns, but because you did have the opportunity to carry a lot of different firearms.
I've carried a lot of different guns. I've shot a lot of different handguns. And I know a lot of people, I never sell guns. I've bought, sold, traded. Because I always want to try something new. It's the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because you start out with, like, you know, the Glock, you got to get a Glock 19. I didn't. I got a Glock 21 because I'm super smart. But
what is a Glock 21?
Oh, that's the full-size 45 auto.
Got it.
God's caliber.
It's in God's caliber.
Yeah.
Two World Wars, bro.
Two World Wars. That's all you need to know. actually, funny enough, I'm actually carrying a HK USP 45 right now.
So, oh, wow.
So the 45 didn't get away from me. It's actually my favorite semi-auto cartridge. But
yeah. I mean, it.
Yeah. Oh, and going back to your, like how I actually got into it. I'm big into handguns. No one in my family is. They're all riflemen.
Oh, wow.
But I like to say I was a poor kid in the 90s, which means I grew up watching the movies my parents already owned. Action movies from the 80s.
Yeah. My man.
So, like,
I'm... How many Berettas did you own?
I currently own three.
Yeah.
But I've
owned, my man.
I don't even know. So many over the years.
For those of you who are not from the 90s, the Beretta...
It was king.
For you Zoomers out there, the Beretta was king.
My favorite movie is Lethal Weapon, so...
Oh, mine is Die Hard.
Well, and most...
I mean, my favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard.
Well,
never seen it.
And you're wrong because Lethal Weapon is the better Christmas movie. No. It actually has Jingle Bell Rock in the beginning, so...
But does it at a Christmas party?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. anything else that you'd like to share with regards to your, like, shooting history? What do you do now? Like, what's your jam right now?
My jam? Well, I actually just started shooting USPSA with you guys. Nice. So that was awesome. Pretty super. I had done one match previously, like 9-ish years ago, with a lady at a gun store I used to work at. That was super fun. But I just, being over the road, I never had time to really get back into it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I've always enjoyed, like, taking a service grade handgun and then just pushing how far I can shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I get
a lot at 100 yards.
With scope on your firearm? On your pistol?
Yeah, Phil is saying that because he has to use optics to hit most
things. That is true, yes.
Yeah. No, I use the little nubbins on the gun. I like to call them nubbins now.
Nubbins.
The iron sights. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Wow.
Well, they're steel now. I mean, they're not really iron.
Yeah. Or the Glocks, like, plastic.
That's true.
Yeah. I knew it.
So they actually work. Believe it or not, a lot of people crap on them, but they do work. If you open carry, then they're very susceptible to damage, which I have broken sights off Glocks before. Like, just literally just carrying and walking around a gun store, you bump into a door frame and crack half the sight off.
Oh, wow.
So if you're going to open carry, I wouldn't keep them. But if you're just going to conceal carry, they work fine.
Huh. Interesting. I don't own a Glock. I own a Glock clone,
mm-hmm.
but I do not own an actual Glock.
The Poor Poet?
The Poor Poet, which is the PSA dagger. Mm-hmm. We call it the Poor Poet because Tyler owns the actual War Poet.
I do.
From Shadow Systems. And then the Poor Poet is a clone as well, but it kind of rhymes.
It looks pretty much the same. Yeah. We have the same dot on it, too. It literally looks almost the same.
But we know which one's better.
Yeah.
And it's the Poor Poet.
No, never.
So yeah, real quick, before we kind of dig into the topic here, I do kind of want to get into a little bit of what did you guys do this week in shooting? Tyler, I know that you did something this week, so I'll start with you. What did you do this week in shooting?
This week, I definitely went out to the range. Let me think about, what did I do again?
I was there with you.
I know, that's why I'm like, wait, what did we do again? Sometimes my brain is really good at, like, present and future past. I'm like, I don't even remember.
Do you need, like, a...
No, I got this.
Okay.
So this week, Philip and I went to the range. We actually are members of an outdoor range, and we did some bolt gun stuff with his 6.5 Creedmoor. I had to think again. I'm like, wait, what are you
doing? Yeah, man.
His 6.5 Creedmoor, and he was testing the ballistics of it, seeing how fast his bullets were going. And then afterwards, we were just having fun shooting some steel at 100 yards with our ARs and our handguns. So it was a pretty chill, simple day. We only had like an hour before sunset. So
whose fault was that?
Yeah, that was totally yours. My fault. I was in the car. It was like 1:30. I'm like, hey, bro, where you at? What's your ETA? And he's like, where are you? I'm like, I'm 10, 15 minutes away from the range. Where are you? He's like, I'm still at my kid's hockey game.
Literally an hour away from the range.
Yeah, so. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go on a trail then. So I ended up which I wanted to do anyway, so it worked. I ended up going to a park, went for a walk because I live what I preach about what I said in the last podcast.
Go outside.
Go outside. Yeah. I did just a quick mile walk with my backpack and then read for like 30 minutes to an hour.
Would you say outside is good for you?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, but to clarify, we've spent the last several thousand years perfecting inside.
Exactly, so. Which is terrible for us.
Well, it's pretty awesome because one would argue that a higher power has perfected the outside, so there's not much improvement to be done.
I was just looking for an opportunity to quote Sheldon from Big Bang Theory.
Oh my goodness.
I cannot see. I've never seen it.
I've seen clips of it as I kind of randomly go through my YouTube shorts. I feel like it kind of cycles. It'll go from like Friends to Big Bang Theory to How I Met Your Mother to Suits back to Friends, and kind of just goes through that loop.
Yeah.
It's great. And Young Sheldon, but
and Young Sheldon,
and I gotta remember that one. But on topic.
Yep. So Brian, what did you do with firearms this week?
I took my sister to an indoor range. She's got her CPL class coming up, and it's gonna be at a indoor range. We normally shoot outside because I don't like indoor ranges; they're just super loud and annoying. But she wanted to kind of get used to that, so just had her go inside, and she's a good precision shooter. You know, you get her on a target, we get her bang and steal at like 50 yards pretty easy.
That's awesome.
But she's never sped it up or tried to push it. Yeah. So I just brought a Glock 17, loaded up a bunch of mags, and I just gave her like different drills to run, controlled pair kind of to start out, just to get her used to popping. And then like the first mag, I had her just focus, you know, fundamentals hard and just, you know, try and make one hole. But then just had her pick up, and then the target we had different dots on it. So, and they had numbers assigned to them. So kind of like a drill that Tyler and I did a while ago. I just call a number and she'd shoot it.
Yep.
And then I'd call multiple numbers. She'd shoot multiple times. Just getting her comfortable shooting fast with a gun. And she did really well. So
nice. That's awesome. I assume that her CPL class is indoors.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, gotcha. It's why you were shooting.
Yeah. Well, December 16th, I think. And it could snow. It might not. I mean, it's Michigan. You never know.
Yeah, so that's true. Yeah. The fact that it's not snowing right now is amazing.
Thank God.
I know.
Yeah. And in Michigan, we have a requirement. We don't have constitutional carry in Michigan. So we have a requirement to get your CPL, which does involve a shooting part of the class, not surprisingly, and then also a like sit-down education part of the class too. So it's not too bad. And then I think it's 5 years or like – your birthday or 5 years, whatever comes, like your birthday definitely come first.
Yeah, so. it's every 5 years on your birthday.
And then you renew from there. Yeah. Yep. Which reminds me, I need to renew.
Michigan is a big fan of having you spend money on your birthday. So.
It's very true. Everything's on your birthday. Every license, every vehicle registration.
Give you some extra taxes on your birthday.
Oh, bro. Oh, dude.
Michigan's like, happy birthday to me.
I know. Hey, but Michigan rumors my birthday. Yeah. I get a letter in the mail every year from them.
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday.
Please give us your tax dollars.
They remind me like 2 months ahead of time. Like, dude, your birthday's coming up. Please send us money.
Thank you. Wait, come on.
Dang, you should be giving me money. Yeah.
Send me a card with money in it.
All right, let's kind of dip into the main topic here real quick. The one thing I do want to start off before we start talking about concealed carry is this is going to be our disclaimer that we'll probably have on a lot of these episodes. We are not lawyers. Do not take this as any legal advice. Check your state, local, and employer for laws and rules around concealed carry. You should always know what the laws are in your state, and even if you have a state where you have some cities that trump those, just make sure that you know that. And then obviously we don't want you to get let go from your job, your employer, so make sure that you have the permission to do that at work. And with that, let's kind of jump into this. So what we're gonna do is I'm gonna like step through and just kind of ask a few questions of both Tyler and Brian. Unfortunately, just because of the way my job and whatnot, I don't get to conceal carry as much as I'd like to.
Old job.
Yeah, the new job is mostly from home. So, but anyway, so the just kind of stepping through these guys. These guys have a lot of experience carrying all day long, carrying different types of firearms, and carrying in all different situations. So
I've carried two. He's nice. Like, yeah, all sorts of firearms.
All right, Tyler, you're off the panel.
I'm like, I've literally only carried two. Well, I guess technically three. Well,
I would say, Tyler, in your defense, though, that may be true, but your practice on shooting from concealment and your ability to get sub-second draws off like from carry is really good. So it's just
just put it this way: Tyler is in my phone as Tyler Quick Draw Tran.
Man, I'll take it.
I like that.
You're also Philip Danger.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, that's awesome. That's kind of a given, though. But Tyler's is Tyler Snack Pack in my phone.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I was hoping you'd never remember that one. I hate that nickname.
He loves it.
I hate it.
It's his comms name, too.
It's terrible.
You don't get to pick your nickname.
No, you don't.
Although my nickname is Battle Dwarf.
Oh.
So it's a cool nickname. Nowhere near as cool as, what's that one guy?
Battle Gnome?
Yeah, nowhere near that cool.
Yeah.
So, it's funny.
So next time I'm at the range and I'm like going to try to pick you up and throw you, you're like, no one throws a dwarf.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
A patch that says Battle Dwarf for your birthday.
That would be sweet.
When's your birthday?
July 24th.
Perfect. I have a ton of time.
If you remember, I will be impressed. Unlike the state of Michigan, who always remembers.
Yeah.
Or Pepper's Farm.
They also it's forever going to be on the internet soon. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Well, I come from a family of Dungeons & Dragons nerds. And I used to have a big full beard. And my uncle, who's like, he's not quite as tall as you, but he's a taller guy. And he's like, I always kind of imagine you like a dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, so I'm a battle dwarf. He's like, that's not what I said. I was like, that's what I heard.
Yes. Wait, so you did nickname yourself?
Well, in a way, yes, but it was funny. So
that's right. Tyler gave himself the nickname Snack Pack. So
No. Brent gave me that nickname.
That's fair.
I did not give myself that nickname. All I did was we had a range day where it was like a 10-hour thing. So I'm like, I'm gonna make sure I have snacks. So I did. I had protein bars, I had high chews, I had some gummy worms. It was great.
Yeah, you were a snack pack.
Yeah, and actually, I think I had a sandwich.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm hungry. It's a 10-hour, 12-hour range day. I'm like, I'm going to make sure I have food.
Real men don't eat.
So you can say whatever the heck you want, man. It's like the people who have like body, like plate carriers and don't have water on them. Like, you're an idiot. So I'm just saying, no offense. Actually, very much offense to you.
I like snacks. They're delicious.
I like snacks too. I may or may not have brought gummy worms to this recording tonight.
Yeah, I had like six pieces beforehand.
That was my reason for being late. Okay, so getting back on subject here a little bit. Why? Why conceal carry?
Because Second Amendment trumps, bro.
Trumps
everything. Just kidding.
I would actually like to bring up a much more important reason.
Yeah?
And that would be ninja bears.
Oh.
I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, explain the ninja bears.
I'm just, have you ever seen them?
No.
What's a ninja
bear? Because they're ninjas.
Yeah. They're, yeah.
So you need a gun just in case.
Okay.
I'm just, two words, ninja bears.
Yeah, our podcast over. That was easy.
There we go. Man. But no, on a serious note, we're protectors. That's why the reality of the world is there's evil people out there. And the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. I know it's a very cliche thing to say, but that's why I carry. I didn't start. I'm originally from Hawaii, where it's the strictest gun laws in our nation. And for me, in 2020, when we had the riots happen, I was like, what am I going to do if someone breaks down my door and tries to attack me? And at the time, I was engaged to my future wife. I got nothing. So I bought a shotgun, and then soon after, I got to conceal carry because I'm like, well...
Did you try to conceal carry the shotgun?
Very much, yes. I stuck it right down my pants. It's glorious.
Respect.
Unfortunately, yeah. In the state of Michigan, we have a concealed pistol license, not a concealed shotgun license. So
that's true.
Then you had to make the next attempt.
That's true. But I do have an AR pistol, so I can conceal carry that, which is glorious.
No, what I was... being serious, so preservation of life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I carry. Not necessarily my own. I mean, I'm... fairly stocky guy, and I can, I train kickboxing in high school when most people play in sports, so I can fight. But especially if I'm out with my mom, my sister, even my dad, he's getting a little bit older. That's why I carry, to take care of my family.
Yep.
I took a fighting pistol at Tactical Response with James Yeager.
Rest in peace.
And the thing he said that stuck with me is, before you press that trigger, the question you should ask yourself is, whose life am I saving? I thought that was powerful.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that's very powerful.
Almost like he did it for a living.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, it keeps it positive too, versus saying like, what life am I saving versus like,
what life am I taking?
What life am I about to take?
Right.
And that psychology of it right there is like, man, absolutely, I'm about to take a life. I'm about to take a life. It's like, no,
right,
you're saving lives right now.
100%.
That's what you're doing.
So it's like, if I got carjacked, right, and it's just me, take my car, bro. I got insurance.
Mm-hmm.
But you change one thing, you put one of my family members or a friend in that vehicle, I'm saving their life now. That's just where it's at. So, you know.
Right. And I think a lot of it is, too, that, like, realistically, we live in a world that is, it's not perfect. Like, a lot of people would like to think that it is, and they like to go against the Second Amendment, and they like to say, you know, you don't need guns, blah, blah, blah. Well, realistically, we have a, like, epidemic of criminals out there who think they can do whatever they want, and they're going to always carry a gun, and you're not going to get all the guns off the street. It's impossible, right? I mean, it, like, in other countries where guns are banned, like, the criminals still have the guns, right? So, realistically, if you have, like, an incident where you have to defend somebody, and you're matching like for like, unfortunately, and they have typically the drop and advantage on you. So, and we'll get into training a little bit too and how you can kind of minimize that advantage a little bit as well. But it's not, a lot of people assume that men especially carry because they have like a macho like thing. Actually, to feed, right?
Yeah, funny enough, I suppose not funny enough, but the whole reason I got my CPL was Michigan used to have a law where if you had a CPL, you didn't have to do, well, you still filled out the form for the background check, but they didn't have to call it in because it counted. So there was actually a lady I used to work with at a gun store, and we were talking about the reasons we got our concealed carry licenses, and I brought up to her mine, like just basically to speed through the process of buying a gun, because I buy a lot of guns. And then she brought up why she got one. Two men attempted to snatch her. Luckily, she was able to walk away. I think this was down in Kalamazoo. But she was able to walk out to West Main with a bunch of traffic and get away from them.
Wow.
And it just totally changed my perspective. I'm like, I don't have to even think about something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is an equalizer.
Right.
It is.
What is it? They say that God created man and Smith & Wesson made them equal?
No, no. It's God. No. God created all men. Sam Colt made them equal.
Oh, okay. Right. I was close.
You.
I like Smith & Wesson, so.
Yeah. Smith & Wesson is next, but Colt dominated Colt. In the
you're right.
The peacemaker, 19th and 20th century. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like one of their sailing points.
Yeah.
But realistically, and not to joke or belittle your ideas behind that, but anybody can conceal carry, like as long as you're of age and in the state that you're in, and especially for people who are like smaller in stature, whether it's a small dude or like a smaller woman, I mean, it really truly does equalize things a little bit. And you think about a lot of the issues revolving around like human trafficking and that kind of stuff. I think if more people knew what their rights were and their ability to carry, you know, that would help reduce that a little bit. I'm not saying it's perfect. There's no silver, gosh, it's a gun joke. There's no silver bullet to like solve any kind of problem. But even if you can think of getting a criminal to think twice, right? Because anytime you have, people always talk about the United States having an epidemic of like mass shootings, right? But those typically happen in areas where you are not allowed to carry.
Yeah, I think it's in the 90th percentile. So it's ridiculously 94% high.
94%
of them. Yeah. Mm, of course. Yeah. I mean, where else would a criminal go anyway? Right.
Yeah.
That's what bad guys do. Yeah. They're ambush hunters. Well, and I like victims. They don't want strong prey.
Right. And not to get into semantics, but it's not mass shootings, it's mass killers. We're shooters. We go out and shoot in
practice.
Yeah,
that's right.
But they're mass murderers. Yeah.
No, you're right.
Mass killers.
You're right. And sometimes like it's funny because the media gets you into that mind frame of like thinking in that space that it's mass shooter, but no, it's a mass murderer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, mass killer.
But they want to demonize all guns and people who you know, go out. So it's not just there's the serious side of it for sure, but I also enjoy shooting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a shooter. That's what I do. You guys do too. So it's like just even being able to take words like that and demonize them just to crap on the shooting community. It sucks. So.
Yeah. You mentioned your reason for getting your CPL too. Ironically, I actually got my CPL not because I was planning on carrying again, because of the inability to really carry anywhere like for long periods of time because of my employer. But realistically, it was I got it because I was shooting competitively. And again, I know we talk about Michigan a lot here, but that's because we're at. But if you had your concealed carry permit, it changed the way that you were able to carry in your vehicle. So it made it easier for me to not have to worry about like if I'm going to a match and I throw like my ammo like in the front seat, or I throw my pistol in the front seat or back seat or wherever it may be, like, and they're attached and there's magazines with bullets in them and that kind of stuff, like I'm not gonna have to worry about like if I get pulled over, I'm legally covered because I have my CPL, right? That's the reason I got it. And I do carry periodically, especially if I'm out, like, you know, whenever I'm not at work, I will carry. And then other instances as well, too, that maybe we'll get into here in a little bit as well. But, okay. So now that everybody's got their snacks again,
That's the beauty of a podcast. They would never know unless you actually bring it up. Thanks for that.
I don't know. They can hear you chewing.
No, they can't.
They can hear your jaw popping.
No crunchy snacks.
Yeah. I don't know, right?
Okay, so we kind of talked about the why behind the concealed carry, but when to carry?
When not to carry?
Well, but, I mean, it really depends on the person.
Like Brian and I are probably of the same belief. Like, yep. I've had people ask me, Tyler, how often do you carry? And I look at them like, dude, when don't I carry?
It's a much shorter list.
It's extremely rare. I don't carry on airplanes.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Right.
That's probably about it.
Legally, all the places that you're excluded to carry, which is, you know, unfortunate because again, they're spots where you know, they can't, like, you can't carry. So now they're like spots that are, they know they're undefended. So there's
places where people have carried. You know, like, I used to be an over the road truck driver. Mm-hmm. It's not like I stopped at the California state line and put my guns up and all that. Mm. You know, I'm not going to die in California just because I'm doing my job. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, same with New York or wherever. But it's, you know, what do you do? I mean, in those states, as long as it's in a lockbox, ammo separate from the gun, you can still travel. Right. I forget I think there was a law passed. It's like the right to travel. I can't think of it right now. I'm kind of blanking on it. But like you're allowed to travel in all. Yeah, you're allowed to travel in all 50 states with a firearm.
Oh, interesting.
But it just has to be locked up, away, separate.
It depends too, because there are places like Illinois. Once again, I am not a lawyer, but I did get this from lawyers. As out of state CPL carriers, if you can actually conceal carry your gun driving through Illinois, no issues at all. But the moment you get out of your car, that's when you need to unload and lock up your gun and put it in the trunk.
Well, and what's funny about Illinois is the vast majority of counties there are sanctuary counties for the Second Amendment.
Yeah, so, which is nice. You know, it's literally just Chicago.
Right.
Yeah, there are a lot of states that have that. Again, check with your local laws and make sure that you're covered. You know, we're not lawyers, so don't take any of this advice. And there are some sites out there, too, that will kind of help you with the carry rules and laws. I think of like USCCA, I think they've got
they have a reciprocity map.
Yep, where you can find out where like your concealed carry permit is good, where else, and then they'll also cover a lot of the laws, like where you can and cannot carry. So obviously check those locations out, find out what is available to you as a citizen of the state that you live in. Again, there's a lot of states out there that have constitutional carry. There's still limits on places that you can carry, but you don't have to necessarily have your permit to carry.
Isn't it awesome how like over 50% of America's constitutional carry now?
That is awesome.
Yeah.
It's like 26 states or 27. Yep. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yep.
I want to get back to when to carry, though, because I know for a lot of people, it's not a realistic option. You know, if you've got, you know, two, three, four kids and your job's on the line, what's the higher risk factor? You know what I mean?
That's true.
So it's not realistic for everybody. It's realistic for me. I'm a single dude and I got a really cool boss. So it is definitely something to take into account. You know, could you afford to lose your job? And I know it's especially on the internet where it's, you just get another job. You can't get another life.
Yeah.
But how much of your life is that going to affect? What kind of hell is that going to bring on your family? You know, being a man is being a provider.
Yep.
I would say that's number one, you know. Yeah. So what do you do in that situation? You know, do you let people pressure you into carrying or not? I mean, it's a personal choice. But if I was in that situation, I would not. I would take care of my family monetarily. And then when they're with me, I would carry as frequently as possible to be able to provide protection in that sense.
Yeah, my wife worked at a place where she was at a front desk. And people would come and go, and it was a locked building, and she had to buzz people in, so she had some control in that space, but she was not allowed to carry. And I was like, you need to talk to like the safety team here and ask if you can get an exception to that rule. Mm-hmm. And no business is going to let you do that. If they have a blanket statement that says you can, they're probably not going to let you. And I don't even know if the safety team people even carried in the office at all.
Or even if they can give you an exception. I mean, I know we're, you know, you guys, we're doing gun stuff here, but, you know, pepper spray, mace, taser, anything, you know.
True. Have something.
Yeah, it's not something between a gun and a harsh word. Well, if you live in that area of between gun and harsh word, you got to figure out what works for you. A Coubertin, you know, it's not the best thing in the world.
A what?
You don't know what a Coubertin is?
I have no idea what that
is. It sounds like a snack.
Basically, your pen is a Coubertin.
Oh,
It's a small, hard object that you can use to manipulate joints.
Gotcha, okay.
Pinch people, strike.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. So learned a new word today.
It's Coubertin. Mm.
Yeah.
I just call that my right arm.
There you go.
Yeah.
I use it to strike.
Like a rock.
Yeah. And yeah.
But kind of going back to, I do like how you even brought a pepper spray, because to the best of my knowledge, there aren't really any places that ban pepper spray, which is really nice.
Well, and especially if you're a woman, mm-hmm. I think more people are going to be forgiving of some it's kind very of self-defense
accepting.
Weapon.
Yeah. I don't want to say forgiving. They basically accept as like, I hope you have pepper spray, basically. Right, if you're going on a run, have pepper spray.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, bring a Glock, but
well,
pepper
course.
Spray too.
I think with pepper spray too, there's like, there are certain crimes that like a firearm is going to cover, right? Like anytime like there's risk of life, there's always going to be, if you have a firearm, that's obviously your first tool of choice in that space, right? Because you're matching, you know, unfortunately firepower. But there are situations where like with women abductions and that kind of stuff, where you have, if they have pepper spray on them, that can be a tool that they can use to avoid mm-hmm. becoming abducted. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's not going to stop necessarily
at least deter them.
Yep. It's not going to stop a specific like crime, like sometimes you commit murder. I mean, it's not going to stop murder, most likely. Maybe, you never know. But
well, and it's so like training in martial arts, or even you can use boxing, which is a martial art, but it's the punch you don't see that knocks you out.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's something small and quick, and but you can do it fast and throw someone off, and you got that time to split and run, you know, that's another factor. So.
All right. So we talked about, again, like the whys and the when. And I know this is probably the most exciting part of the podcast for the vast majority of people. But I want to talk about like what to carry, right? Because obviously there's a whole lot of different things that you can carry in different situations that you can carry those in. So I'm thinking like, for example, right now when we're recording this, it's in the middle of, or it's the beginning of the winter, right? So, mm-hmm. Concealed carry options open way up. You could conceal carry a, H&K USP if you wanted to right now. Yeah. That's why I do it in the summer too. Yeah.
But that's learning how to dress around again.
So, what kind of like, okay, so I'm a new shooter. I'm working on getting my CPL. I'm going to get my CPL. Obviously, one solution is not fit all. Mm-hmm. But what are you recommending for like a new concealed carry?
I would have to ask the individual. Like, you got to be honest with me. If I pick out a gun for you that you're going to shoot well, are you going to commit to carrying that?
Mm-hmm.
I would say for most people, that's going to be a no, because I'd pick something like a Glock 19 or a Smith & Wesson M&P Compact.
Yep.
Something in that range, that mid-size gun that is definitely carryable, but is vastly more shootable than a Glock 43 or even a Smith & Wesson Shield. But, you know, be real with me about where you're actually going to carry. So that I would start there. If someone wants to pocket carry, we're going to have a different conversation than someone who's going to belt carry or...
Yep, 22 Derringer. Yep.
Exactly. Yes. North American Arms, baby.
That's right. Or one of those little credit card ones that you like fold and then like it turns into a 22.
Yeah,
it's like two shots.
I know. And I know.
I thought those ones were just single shots.
I think they're double.
Are they?
I think
they may make like maybe one that is.
But
one
either way.
Yeah.
I do have a Bond Arms Derringer.
Really?
45 Colt.
I want to shoot 10
shot show.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of going back to what to carry, I 100% agree with Brian. Like, it also goes back to, is this going to be the only gun you're going to get? Are you going to get multiple guns? What are you going to go with? So for most people, I typically would recommend about that mid-size compact gun. So like a Glock 19, M&P 9C, P320C, or something along a CZ P10C, something like that, because it's a nice middle ground. If you're only going to get one gun, that's about what I would recommend.
Yeah, because then it falls into your home defense role.
Home defense, concealed carry, duty. Because that's basically what I have. I have a Shadow Systems MR920, which is a Glock 19 clone.
And Tyler's allowed to be wrong, so that's cool.
And that's fine. and that's why we have multiple people here. Well, but with that one gun, I flex it with everything. I use it for competitive shooting, USPSA. Use it for duty carry. I mean, I don't duty carry, but like, whatever. Maybe. On my war belt, battle belt, duty belt, whatever you want to call it, and I conceal carry that.
It's funny because like, duty's like poo.
It's great. That's a poo joke. My goodness, you two. It's so funny how like personalities mesh and how like we go with patterns. I'm kind of learning. I like to start things off funny and end funny. You guys like to do it in the middle.
Yeah, we're like a duty sandwich.
Oh my goodness. So that's where if you're just telling me like, you know, this is going to be the only gun I get, that's what I would say. I would say probably get something in the middle. But if you're going to tell me, it's like, you know what, I don't know for sure. Or I would tell someone, borrow different guns or rent out guns and find what works for you.
To your point, I used to work in a gun store. And what I would tell people is I would rather see you spend $500 on ammo. And find a gun you 100%. Like that you actually shoot. Yep. Because here's the thing. If you shoot the gun, you'll become confident. If you're confident, you'll actually carry.
Right.
Right. So if you don't shoot it, you won't be confident. You won't carry it. It'll just be a magic talisman that you put in your nightstand that's supposed to ward off evil. So you need to be shooting the guns. Just because it feels good in your hand in the store does not mean you're going to shoot it well.
Right. That's true. And at the same time, too, like whenever people would say like, hey, try out this gun and see how it feels in your hand. A lot of those people tend to be newer shooters or never have shot before. They don't know how to hold a gun. Mm-hmm. Most people don't know how to hold a gun right away. So maybe it feels good at the time, but they're holding it completely wrong. So now maybe we adjust their grip. And it's like, oh man, this feels great now. A gun that they didn't like before.
A PPK feels great with a cup and saucer grip. But if you're actually trying to apply a high thumbs forward grip to it, it's a little awkward.
So oh yeah.
It can be done, but it's very awkward.
Yeah, it's like shooting a Glock. It's like, you know, holding onto a brick, right? So it's
I know what you're talking about.
The frame is...
You don't even shoot a Glock.
I know, I'm kidding.
You shoot you shoot a Glock made for human hands.
That's true.
Yeah, joking aside, I feel like we're in the golden age of concealed carry firearms. Right, because I think it kind of started off with the M&P shield, like the OG shield.
Yes.
Right, it was...
Time. Well, even before that, Carr.
Yeah, you're right. Arms made you
the
are first, right.
Yeah, that's yep. the slim that, line that, nine yep. for carry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of it... And so I think that those two like kind of kicked it off where you could get decent capacity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think the shield was 7 to 8, depending on which magazine you had in the gun, plus one in the chamber, I suppose. And then...
Well, and actually, you brought up capacity. Yeah. What's funny is a lot of people will still go with a 5-shot J-frame, a little revolver.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It works. It gets the job done. It's easy to conceal.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, and that's, again, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask on the podcast, because while both Tyler and I tend to carry semi-autos, the revolver is an option as well too today still. Mm-hmm. People think it's antiquated, but the thing is there's a lot to be said with what you have. Carry what you have. Mm-hmm. Carry what's comfortable for you.
Mm-hmm. Carry what makes sense to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's certain things that go beyond like, you know, groupthink is 9mm, striker fired, optic, light, because if you don't have those things...
That's the correct answer.
Exactly. If you don't have that, you're going to... So when I started carrying, if you didn't have night sights on the gun, you're going to die. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was like, if you don't have night sights on your gun, dun, 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 you're going to die.
Yeah.
If you don't... And then it moved into, if you don't have night sights and a light, dun, 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 you're going to die. Yeah. And now if you don't have night sights, a light, and an optic, a comp... Dun, 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 you're
night sights
die.
Are so... The thing is, what's the point of night sights you can't even see anyway?
No, well, okay.
That makes no sense.
No, no, no.
That'll never make
no,
sense.
They do make sense because when are you actually, percentage-wise, actually outside when it's pitch black?
Me? Rarely.
Correct. So when are you outside when it's dusk? There's a little bit of light.
Now a lot because it's winter.
Well, especially here in the north, right?
Yep.
So, but if I can still see that someone's a threat... I can still see you as a person, but I may not be able to pick up my sights as well, but I know you're coming at me.
I'm a red but I can guy, still, so it literally doesn't apply to me.
I understand, but I'm just telling you the thought then.
That makes sense.
But you can still line up your sights.
That makes sense.
So there's still a valid option.
Yeah.
So, and then you're also, like, especially if you're carrying a Glock, you're moving from plastic sights to a steel sight.
Right.
So.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to take into consideration.
So the low light is essentially where you come into play. Where a fiber optic wouldn't really help out.
So either. So I guess kind of now going back to like what gun to carry, it really depends like what's more important to you, shootability or concealability?
And basically from people that actually carry a lot and actually shoot, they're going to give you the same answer. Go shoot guns before you buy something and buy something you like shooting. But what I was talking about earlier, when we were talking a little about revolvers. It's not just sticking with what's practical. Sometimes you want to carry what's fun. Sometimes there's pride in ownership. You know, if you go out and you buy a $5,000 Corth revolver, you want to carry it. You want to shoot it. You want to get your money's worth out of that gun.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a 1911 guy and you go pick up a Nighthawk Custom or you pick up a Wilson Combat, you're going to want to carry that gun. You've spent a lot of money on it. So there's that pride of ownership. So there's more to firearms than just the, well, this is practical and what I need. You know, I've carried my Model 629. I had a 4-inch 500 mag. I actually carried that to the gas station one time. But I actually carried it because it's like, dude, can I carry this and actually get away? Like, can I conceal this?
That's amazing.
And I could. Yeah. And I actually shot that gun very well. So I was very confident if, you know, a Chevy got out of line. engine block.
I think what you're saying too with regards to carrying something you have pride and ownership in or something that you like to shoot. Because if you don't like shooting something, like if it has really snappy recoil and you're just, you know, you're not able to manage the recoil depending on who you are, your hand size and that kind of stuff, you're going to be less likely to want to train with it, number one. And then you're less likely even to carry it because you're like, I don't like the way this makes me feel.
Right.
Or if you have something that you do that you really like to carry, then you're more likely to carry that specific firearm.
Yeah, because like if I'm picking between, you know, two guys to, back me up, I've got one dude who's got, you know, a Glock 34 with a light, optic, all the stuff, but he doesn't shoot or carry because it's too big and it's kind of awkward for him or whatever. I would rather take the dude who's like a cowboy action shooter who carries a single action army and can run that thing like a little mini machine gun. You know what I mean? Have you ever seen him shoot?
They're crazy. Fantastic. Like single
idea.
But I would, no idea. We'll look it up.
This is that's the thing too. Like I'm very I would still consider myself still fairly new to firearms, even though it's been 3 years, and I will admit I carry every single day. I shoot probably more than the average person.
Yeah. In 3 years, you've come so
far. Yeah.
So, okay.
So for you're me, way ahead of I have people. A very simplistic view when it comes to guns, especially what I carry. Like, I definitely lean more towards the practical side. I do have a more expensive carry gun. I'll admit that. And I definitely take kind of pride in ownership. It's like, I've got $1,300 gun that I'm carrying right now.
And it's the war poet.
It is a war poet.
John Lovell.
It's true. But at the same time,
blessed by him.
That's true. I have met the dude. He's a great guy.
John Lovell's
He's a pastor too, fun fact. And
he just had a new video pop up.
My man. So but it's also a gun that I've carried now for 2 years and I'm able to hit 100 yards with 20 to 50 yards consistently, no issues. And I've done USPSA.
Yep.
With it, and that's kind of why I did it, to try to see like how far can I push this gun. So for me, it's like I like to just stick with one gun, one operating system, and just stick with it and just become a master of that operating system. And because of that, I know there'll be some carryover of other guns. I have shot some other guns. I'm like, I definitely don't like this gun. I'm not as accurate as I can be. I can shoot it,
Not in disagreement, but to add to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Once you've shot enough, like if you spent, a couple hundred rounds on a double action trigger to go, and I know people will disagree on this, but transitioning from like a double action, single action, a Beretta or a AHK USP to a Glock, to an M&P, like it's not hard once you have fundamentals down. But 100%. A lot of people, I think, overplay that where I'm going to master this one, or you just shoot them all.
Yeah.
And that's where
why I own so many different guns.
Yeah, and that's where Brian and I have different schools of thoughts, which is perfectly fine. There are preferences and schools of thought. I'm of the school of thought is pick one operating system and stick with it. I'm of that belief because I don't like buying extra holsters, extra accessories, different mags. That's my personal opinion. It's like tools, like power tools.
Yeah, just buy like, Milwaukee get it, and be get done
a,
with it.
Or a DeWalt. It's funny, I'm a DeWalt guy. Of course we disagree on that too. So it's
I said earlier, you're allowed to be wrong, man.
It's fine. You know, you can get whatever the heck you want. But for me, it's like pick an operating system. So now it's like, hey,
my uncle's a DeWalt guy too. So.
Good man. So, but pick one and you know it's going to work. But what's nice is I do have a universal TLR1 carry holster.
You tried my Glock 40 in that.
I did. It was great. So now I can actually carry.
Tell them what you found out about carrying a long slide.
It's hot, man.
When you put it in the holster, you said, you know how it's not pointing at a...
Oh, it's definitely pointing at it. Yeah. It hurts. It's...
for those of you who don't know, the Glock 40. I apologize, I said it wrong.
40
is probably the longest slide firearm that Glock makes.
It is. Well, 100%.
Yeah, it hands down. It's a 10mm.
It is practically a rifle.
That's crazy.
It might as well be a rifle. People always talk about Glock and why they don't make rifles. It's because they make the Glock 40 because it's practically a rifle.
It's my favorite joke. It's 9.5 inches of black Glock. The ladies love it.
Oh my goodness. Oh, wow.
We have to edit that out later.
You can edit that part out. But either way, so kind of going back. So there are two schools of thoughts. Either stick with one operating system and just master that, or get as many guns as you can, get the experience.
No. To be clear, start out with one.
Yeah, definitely start with one.
Start with one, please.
Buy one gun, put at least 1,000 rounds through that gun.
Right. That's a lot.
Well, what I'm saying is practice over time. I'm totally kidding. Yeah. But we're addressing like a new shooter. They might think, oh, dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But I don't mean like 1,000 rounds this afternoon. What I mean is, you know...
In two afternoons.
Correct.
One and a half afternoons.
One and three quarter.
But either way...
Three quarters.
No, so, but it's going to be training, do 100 rounds in one weekend. And maybe you can only shoot 100 rounds a month, you know. But spend time with that one firearm. Build a foundation of skills with that one firearm before you move on to other guns. That's what I did. I probably had... somewhere in the neighborhood of 1500 rounds from my Glock 21 before I started moving into other stuff. Cause you just get curious. Oh, you know, I shoot this pretty well. Maybe I'll try a 9mm. And then you move into, well, actually my very first gun was a Snubnose 357. I don't recommend that for a new shooter. That can be problematic. It's a very big explosion going off in front of your face. Then I moved into the Glock 21. And then after that, especially it being, you know, big bore, I moved into 44 Magnum, stuff like that. Just cause I was a big fan of power, you know.
Yeah,
I like the big recoil, the big boom. So obviously from being a kid to growing up, I learned how to manage recoil, things like that. So
yeah, and I think, like, again, we mentioned earlier that we are truly in a golden age of carry, right? So it's impossible to say what you should not carry, which is very much a non-answer, which people get really frustrated with. So my recommendation is always, you know, take a look at the firearms that are like the compact ones, like the Shield from Smith & Wesson now, that like their double six Shield, to the SIG, was it the P365?
Yeah,
there's like 10 different variants of P365
like
now.
Find one that in that space, like start there is where I would say to start. Because, and as we'll kind of talk about, is carrying a firearm, especially carrying a full-size firearm or a large firearm, can be difficult and uncomfortable and not reasonable for people, like, depending on what your stature and size is, right? Like, if you're a dude and you're a big dude and you're 6'6", like, you can put a gun anywhere you want, right? Like, and you'll be fine. But if you're a smaller woman, where you're carrying on your body, wherever it may be, like, you're going to have to look at something that's potentially a little bit smaller.
Yep.
So start there, and if that you don't like it, then obviously you can go up from that.
So there's actually a YouTuber. She actually just changed her name, like, her YouTube name from Armed and Style to her name, Tessa Boot. She actually has a video where there's some science behind it, where there's an actual, like, proportion wise to your body and your carry gun.
Oh.
So there actually is such thing as a gun that's too big for you to carry.
Yeah, because she was carrying a Glock 48, and if you took in the dimension of the top of the gun down to the butt of the gun, there's more than 50% of her width.
Oh. Yep.
So she actually had to transition to, I think she moved to a 365X.
I think so. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's the little bit longer grip with 12 rounds, but the shorter slide that
works
better. So it actually is a thing.
Yep.
And a lot of it's based on, like, your body style too. Like, I have a difficult time concealing, even though I'm tall, concealing because that's also busting in a curse, because I can't, like, trying to conceal it without, like, printing like crazy on my body, just because of my body weight it is, it's just difficult to do.
Sure, body dysmorphia or body dysmorphia, but whatever.
Well, and it works for me, so, because I'm short and stocky, so instead of most people have love handles, I have love seats.
Yep.
So I can really have a good
time. That's great.
But I personally have carried everything from, like, a tiny little pocket pistol up to, like, a Glock 19 size.
I had a good while over the summer where I had injured my back in late in the spring, where I was carrying a Glock 42 because it was super light. I really didn't notice it in my waistband, and it wouldn't hurt my back. And that's kind of an advantage to also having some different guns you can pick from, almost like golf clubs.
So, and even then, I know Philip brought it up earlier, how with us, now that it's winter, it's getting colder. And for me, a part of it is with the amount of daylight that we have, since sunset's at 5 o'clock now. So in the winter, I carry with a weapon mounted light. Like, I always have a handheld light on me, but on my gun itself, because now that by the time I'm leaving work, it's dark, I want to make sure I have something on my gun. But in the summer, when sunset's 10 o'clock, there's really no point in having a light on my gun. It's more weight, more bulk, no reason for it.
Why you're wearing like short shorts and tight shirts.
Exactly. Yep, it's true. I got to get my beach bod out with my, what was it, four inch inseam shorts. It's glorious. Got to show off my, I squat, bro. Got to show off my quads. But so there's definitely that for sure. But once again, like Philip was saying, it's a golden age of firearms. There's so many great guns out there. SIG P365. Shield Plus, Glock 19, Shadow Systems, CR920s, whatever.
HKs. And don't be afraid of used guns.
No.
Most people do not shoot used guns enough for it to really matter. And don't be afraid of different calibers. Like if...
9mm King.
It's definitely more popular. It's definitely a very cheap option. But if you can find a used Glock 22 or a used Glock 23 chambered in 40 Smith & Wesson, I know it's a curse word now, but... dude, you can pick the gun up for right around $200, and then you can pick up a case of ammo. Like, for super cheap, you can buy the gun in about 2,000 to 3,000 rounds for what you'd spend on a brand new Glock 19.
That's true. If you transition to a 9mm, it's gonna be so much easier to shoot.
And cheaper. It will be cheaper because you're gonna shoot 40, and then when you go to 9, you're gonna run the gun like a boss.
Yep.
So I think this kind of gives us an opportunity to segue a little bit into ammo selection, which we kind of talked about, and ammo. The caliber, but then there's also a huge difference between what is practice ammo and what is defensive ammo. And I want to make a distinction on this. And again, we got a disclaimer at the beginning of the podcast, it's not legal advice, but if you're shooting like ball ammo for practice, that's great.
They all fall to hard ball.
I don't know if you've heard that before.
You have, it's a 45 auto thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, well, we are 9mm guys.
So no, I know. Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, yeah. We're literally 9mm guys. That used to be the thing.
Really interesting.
But a lot of considerations on that, too, is there are, when you have a defensive ammo for pistols, it is designed to be used in a defensive situation where, like, you want to hit the target and you don't want to go beyond the target, right? Like, you don't want to go through the target. So that's something to consider. Now, there's, and I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on this. And I had always heard that, and this may be an old wives' tale, but you should find out what the police in your state or municipality are carrying and carry what they're carrying. Because if you have to go to court, they don't want to have like, so-and-so is using this extra high power capacity firearm with like shredder ammo and designed to kill. Well, you mean duh. But like, I'm just curious on your guys' thoughts on that. Do you want to carry something that's like the local PD is carrying? Or is it more of like you carry something that's like a popular...
I don't think it necessarily has to be what law enforcement in your local area is carrying, because I think that's an easy trap to fall into. Or if you're carrying the same gun as the cops, you're carrying the same ammo as the cops, are you trying to be a cop?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's a weird loophole too. But I think if you buy any major commercially available self-defense ammo, I think that's going to be a hard case to make.
Yeah.
If you buy like the, what was that, the ammo was popular years ago?
The RIP?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's silly, but... You might run into something there, but again, who knows?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So I was listening to a video by armed attorneys, and there was actually a video about hand loading hollow points.
Yeah, interesting.
So they are lawyers in Texas, and from what I remember, they argue that it doesn't get it brought up in court.
Huh?
Yeah,
they don't care.
Interesting.
They want to use. They don't really care. And once again, I could be wrong. Maybe I'm quoting them incorrectly, but they basically said it's not that big of a deal to handle your own defensive rounds.
I'm more inclined to agree with Tyler. I don't think it's going to be that big.
That's such a nitpick thing that lawyers can try to do. But remember, they're trying to convince a jury. And a lot of times, the jury would be like, a little, from an average jury. And that's why jury selection is so important as well.
Serve on your juries. Don't get out of it. Remember,
well,
if
you might, well, the thing well, is, you might not even get chosen for jury duty. I know, because if you're too gung-ho about guns, they're like, we do not want him.
Remain neutral in that part. But what I'm saying is, if you're smart enough to get out of jury duty, you should probably do jury duty.
Yeah, no
because
kidding.
Because if you're up on trial, wouldn't you want someone, that's true.
Like you?
That would understand.
So, but kind of going back to that, I'm definitely in agreement with Brian.
Oh, it's okay.
So, I have no idea what our local law enforcement carry for their ammo. Personally, I want, for my carry ammo, I want something that I know is I'm accurate with, that I have tight groups and have good ballistics. So I have done my own ballistic gel testing, and I went through five.
But I've seen you shoot, so how do you get tight groups just by changing the ammo?
So it depends on the stuff, because we've had like thanks for that, but because I know my gun hates Winchester. I mean, every gun hates Winchester.
I hate
Winchester. Mine don't. I've owned a lot of guns.
Good for you. I've done some tests, like some groupings with different hollow points, and I've come to find that Federal HSTs in 147 grain, I have extremely tight groupings. Philip was there. He saw it himself, and I'm like, hey, look at that. I was actually very tight with it. And great enough, I didn't even zero with it, but it was actually basically where my red dot was zeroed. So I loved it. And also, I did ballistic gel testing, and I should have looked it up, but I can't remember. But it was like at that sweet spot according to like the FBI ballistic gel testing. So for me, based off of that and other research, I'm like, yeah, Federal HST 147 grains is my choice of carry ammo.
I'm running Speer Gold Dot 124 grain in a 9mm anyway.
Great gun.
And the reason I'm running that is because during the Rona season, I picked up a case of that for the same price as Ball.
That's amazing.
And I'm like, if I'm I might as well.
100%.
Yeah. So that's awesome. I've been running that.
One thing to consider within ammo selection as well, too, a lot of times defensive ammo is loaded hotter than your traditional ball ammo. So make sure that your firearm that you select can shoot, like it's something called plus P. So make sure, like if you're shooting 9, that if it's plus P, that your firearm can handle plus P.
Yeah, I think it's plus P is 10% over like the standard spec. So if it's plus P plus, it's 20. And then like plus P plus pluses is like 30.
Yep.
So, and I have heard it of some law enforcement running into the problem they had when they were running revolvers, because they would train 38 special because it was cheap.
Yeah.
And then when they would shoot their magnum loads on duty, they would have problems getting hits on target. I don't know. I've heard there's some... Jeez, OP, I totally lost my word.
I lost my word.
Jeez, OP. Basically.
Gosh darn.
Yeah.
Golly willikers.
I distracted him with gummy bears again.
Yeah,
gummy worms.
Yeah, gummy worms. They're so good. But basically, so they'll shoot like 115 grain, you know, ball, whatever, and then they'll get out on duty and they're running a 124 plus P plus or a 147 plus P plus, and then they're having trouble getting hits on target.
Yeah.
So what...
Hey, that's why you've got... Grand Thumb. I don't know if he does this now, but 3 years ago, he actually came out with this concealed carry video. Do you know what he carries for his defensive ammo?
122 long grain, 9mm NATO.
His just 9mm ball ammo, FMJ.
Really?
He does not carry hollow points.
Yeah, it's 9mm NATO, and the reason he does that is because that's what he shoots all the time.
Yep.
So he'd rather make accurate hits versus, you know, worrying about, like, over-penetration.
This was back in 2020. I don't know if he's changed that or not, but that was... what he chose to do back then. I'm like, all right.
When guns start coming out,
he also carried a full size gun too.
Yeah. When guns start coming out, I think people are going to start to disperse. So I don't necessarily.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you hope so. You never know. I mean, it depends on the situation that you're shooting in as well, too.
It's be aware of your target and what's beyond it.
Yeah. The one thing too is if you do carry a lot, it is good to periodically cycle your carry ammo and your magazine that you're carrying with as well too, just because
I still have to do that.
Like the springs will get you know, you run into an issue where you have feed problems, right? But the nice thing about that is I would say in people will be like, well, that's just, you know,
so I've had Glock 21 mags loaded for years and I run them and they're fine. So I don't know how much of that is like gun myth versus reality, and I'm one case, one person, one individual. So, you know,
the reason I bring it up though is even if it is
worn out already,
even if it is like a myth, it gives you opportunity to shoot your defensive ammo at least once a year, right? Yeah. It's expensive. Defensive ammo is a lot more expensive unless you're in the middle of Rona, than ball ammo, or target ammo, practice ammo, as they will label it on the boxes. But
yeah, because I mean, keep in mind you're actually carrying the ammo. You're moving around. It's bouncing around. It's not like it's sitting.
Yeah, you get fuzzies in it from your belly button.
Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
And also the humidity from your body heat and sweat.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, a lot of the defensive ammo too runs a different type of metal for the like actual case of the round because of the moisture. Instead of using like a brass, they use like the
nickel coated ammo.
Yeah, I was gonna say nickel coated, but I don't want to sound like an idiot. So
pretty sure it's nickel.
But it's so that I know that helps in that.
And I say coated, but I'm pretty sure it's called nickel plating.
I think. Yeah, yep.
He's nickel something. They painted on there.
I am so special.
Okay, so we talked about little ammo. Again, like look up the big ones. Federal, you know, HST, Spear Gold Dot is very popular. Hornady, Critical Defense, or Critical Duty. Those are all great rounds. Buy a box of each. Find out what your pistol likes the best. But you go with it.
But ballistically, you can pretty much get away with pretty much any hollow point.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did testing with this really cheap Remington hollow points, and they did just fine ballistically. So, you were there.
And,
it was.
You guys ever watch Paul Harrell?
Yeah.
He has a whole video on hyper ammo. They're like really expensive hyper ammo, like Underwood, some of the like even HST stuff like that, where he compares that to like Winchester White Box 124 grain hollow points. And there's really not much difference.
There's not much.
So now, availability wise, you're probably gonna find the hyper ammo because people buy more of it. Sales are a thing, you know. Yep. Marketing is a thing.
Yep.
So that's something else to consider. And bullets are bullets. If all you can afford is ball and you're still carry ball, because I would much rather have a good guy out there with ball ammo in his gun versus no gun at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it wasn't a handgun, but you have Kyle Rittenhouse who used ball ammo of AR-15.
Yeah.
No issues. And to the best of my knowledge, we've never had a situation where someone was killed because a bullet went right through a person and hit another person.
Yeah. Now, what
to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, what does happen is people miss.
Yes.
In law enforcement, that's a big thing where people miss and they can blow through a wall. But typically when bullets hit organic material, they dump a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's true.
Because that's what they're designed to do.
Yep.
Exactly.
Okay, so in thinking about gear, kind of round the gear conversation out, and one of the more important things to talk about, you know, firearm selection, ammo selection, they're all really important, but how do you carry about yourself, right? This is a big one, and this is a lot of personal preference. And I will tell you, like, speaking from experience, you will sink a lot of money in figuring out what works for you, unfortunately.
Yeah, you are going to have a box of shame. That you're going to have a bunch of holsters and stuff that you try out.
Which is why, thankfully, we have companies like Wild Gunner out there that offer holster rentals.
Oh, nice.
So,
I didn't know that. That's
really cool. So Wild Gunner.
That could have saved me a whole bunch of money.
I know.
Over the
and
years.
That's, and I actually have spoken to new shooters who wanted to get into shooting. And I've had, and I tell them, like, look, now that you have picked your gun, do not buy a holster yet. Rent holsters.
Mm-hmm.
I will try them out, try a different, because I'm an appendix guy, because my body type, my body shape, I'm on the more muscular side. I have a little bit of belly fat, but for me, which is actually kind of nice, is my fat goes on my side first and then the front. So the front's a little more flat, so I can appendix carry fairly easily. Whereas if I carried, for me as a lefty, carrying 9 o'clock, I would print like crazy.
Mm,
so I actually need to carry more like the 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock more.
And I'm a chunky monkey, so appendix carry is not a really good option for me. But I carry like not traditional 3 o'clock, but I'm more like 2:30.
Okay.
Like I carry just in front of the hip is like that sweet spot for me where I can just really make a gun disappear. And then like I carried full size guns for years.
Mm-hmm.
The big game changer for me was when they started doing the concealment claws.
Oh yeah.
I know a lot of guys start using them for appendix, but even if you carry at a, you know, two, three, 4 o'clock in that area, it really pushes the butt of that gun in and hides it.
Yes, it does.
Yep. Interesting. Big so time. That's actually a challenge that I've run into personally is, like, because of my body type, it's been very difficult to find a really great way for me to carry. The easiest way, honestly, is to carry pocket carry, which is not always ideal because you can't typically put in a full-size gun in your pocket and not have it print like crazy.
You're carrying 380 in your pocket, right?
I do, yeah. So,
and LCP. Talking about backing up to ammo, for 380, I almost always recommend ball because the hollow points don't penetrate deep enough.
Interesting.
So just a side fact, note.
Yeah.
Huh.
Guess we're doing some gel testing.
I guess we're doing some more gel testing. A lot of, like, with me, the challenge is finding a really easy way to, like, quick. Is to carry, like, on body. And I've always had challenges. Like, I've tried carrying at 3 o'clock and I probably print like crazy because the butt of the gun primarily. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if that claw would.
Oh, and you're really thin too.
I'm not thin.
Dude, you.
I am like
Phil is 7.5 feet tall. and he weighs as much as a big child. So he's a thin feller.
Mm-hmm. I can
see where you have challenges.
I'm basically a tree.
Yeah.
I am a tree. So there's I have no hips, I have no butt, and I literally go like straight down.
No, you're a tree that's been milled. Right, so you're
I thought you were gonna say milks.
Milking the trees.
Is that
where almond milk comes from?
That's
a good question.
All right, so you're saying holsters.
So anyway, so for me, it's always been a challenge to find a way to carry without printing like crazy. Mm-hmm. Now, it depends a lot of what I'm wearing as well, too. Looser shirts obviously help with that, too. But if I'm carrying like at the 3 o'clock position or between, you know, 2 and 3 or 2 and 4, I'm usually carrying like a shield type size gun. Like I can kind of get away with that. Most people aren't going to notice. That I'm printing, but I tried appendix carry. I'm older-ish, so and I had a back injury a few years back, and it just after a while, it gets really uncomfortable for me. And sitting down too, I feel like it jabs into like my super duper long legs.
And that's where we get back to like being real with yourself. You know, be honest. What are you actually going to carry?
A fanny pack,
pocket. Well, there you go. But like a pocket gun.
I have fanny pack carried a lot, actually. Yeah, believe it or not,
I have not.
Well, when I go because
I have self respect and dignity.
But the thing though is for me because. I have a home gym now, but I used to work out at a public gym.
I would have never thought about it for that.
Yeah. So that's I would fanny pack carry a lot whenever I would go to places like that or while I'm like out camping or something.
All right, I retract my statement about self-respect and dignity.
The other thing to consider too is that if you are a runner, mm-hmm. fanny pack carry is like a legit option or a hiking is also a great option too because it's a lot more comfortable. It can be and it's something to practice, right? And we'll talk about that in a little bit here, but it can be more difficult to pull from, but you still have it on you.
Exactly.
Even like a shoulder holster. That takes a lot of practice.
Oh, yeah. Man,
I see shoulder holster.
So
people.
But like if you think about it too, like I mean obviously a lot of
care driving a lot.
Yeah. Fair.
A lot of carrying and a lot of that is like having with you, being comfortable, and also being cognizant of the things that are around you. So if you are a runner, especially if you're like a woman that's out running like early in the morning or whatever, like be cognizant of what's around you. And if something doesn't feel right or somebody's around you that keeps getting closer or whatever it may be, maybe it's time to start unzipping that fanny pack a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? Like getting ready to be able to draw that.
Well, what's really cool is like they make like actual concealed carry fanny packs. Mm-hmm. So it's actually made to draw.
I actually did not know that either.
So like Lena Metulek with her Rose series with her SIG, like they actually have something where it's made to draw and carry.
Which by the way, I wish I could shoot as good as that girl.
I know. Well, I mean, when your dad's Jerry Metulek.
Right. I know.
Well, I mean, but
the genetics she's
and her mom is a competitive shooter.
But she still puts so much.
Oh, 100.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal. So there are actual. Blue Alpha also has a fanny pack.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It's the golden age of concealed carry.
It's a golden age of fanny packs.
Well, fanny packs came back, so.
Can I get a golden fanny pack?
Next episode is fanny packs only.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. That's awesome. I actually did not know that Blue Alpha made a fanny pack. I assume that somebody out there made a carry fanny pack, right? That's easy access.
Blue Alpha. I think Bravo Concealment maybe as well.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah. And speaking of carry, I know we're talking about on-body carry, but if off-body carry is the only way you're willing to carry, don't let someone talk you
out
of that.
Go for it.
If you're going to carry in a purse and you have the different guys, I was one of the dudes at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I heard someone say it, so I would actually do it to people at a store. I'm like, okay, you know where your keys are at in your purse? Yep. All right. And I get a little timer out and be like, go. I'm punching you in the face. Get your keys out. Yeah. And I don't think that is fair to them, because it's not like they've put a lot of prep in it. They haven't thought about it. Yep. So you're just kind of jumping on them as someone with a knowledge base, and you're picking on them. So I don't think that's fair. No. You know what I mean? You're still trying to get them into it. So if carrying off body is how you're comfortable or the only way you'll carry, still carry. You know?
Yeah, and honestly,
just don't leave your purse in the bathroom.
Yes, never. If you are going to, like, again, the fanny pack is closer to your body. With a purse, they do make carry purses that have, I know people talk about like purse snatchers, which is a thing in some cities and like not so much where we live, but they'll like cut the strap and then take the purse or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they make purses that have like the metal like lining within the strap of the purse. You can't cut it as easy. And then if you are carrying with a purse, like a lot of women will tend to just carry it off the shoulder because it looks nice, but carry it like across your body, like a bandolier style thing.
Correct.
Right? So that it's not pulled.
It that way.
Yeah.
It just makes
more sense. Right. Exactly. Yep. And I think that's actually a lot really stylish today too. Like the ladies have like the crossbody, like little, it's almost like a fanny pack, but like a bandolier.
Dude,
fanny
I wear brown boots with black belt, so I'm not going to talk about style. Yeah, I'm terrible.
I don't know either.
The look that Tyler just gave me.
We can go shopping lady. We can go shopping later.
Buy a purse later.
I'm kidding. I don't care about those rules.
So there's different types of carry. There's appendix carry. There's like carrying on your hip. Like, you know, there's also shoulder carry.
So shoulder carry, just a quick story on that one. I had in 2014, I drove a bus. It was for a youth conference for a church. And we drove from Saranac, Michigan, all the way down to Orlando, Florida.
Oh my goodness.
But I mean, and we went straight through. We didn't stop overnight. There was another, my dad was actually the other driver, but I carried a 1911 all steel, two backup mags and a Galco Miami Classic. I wore that thing for almost 30 hours straight.
Mm-hmm.
Super comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like if you're looking for a comfort way to carry, especially if you're driving a lot, or some people can't wear a belt, it's uncomfortable, or like they have an injury, so they can't really do a belt. It's still a great option. I know it's fun to make fun of it because it's like a FUD thing, but
I think a lot of Secret Service, I think they carry a lot of like
Especially in a suit because it's not limiting your mobility at all.
Correct. That's a big thing. If you got to run,
yep,
then like you're able to like pull like and carry a lot easier with that.
Yeah, and my uncle used to like exclusively shoulder carry, even in a t-shirt. He'd like put his carry rig on and throw a t-shirt on over it. So it worked for him. And then we got him a good holster. So.
Yeah, a lot of it is, you know,
he carries a Glock 20.
A lot of it's practicing.
Because 10 millimeters too.
So kind of going back to holsters, now the question is like, what material of holsters? I'm a big fan of Kydex because it's form-fitting. It protects your trigger because with leather, personally, I just don't think it covers your trigger as well. And I even think of like these hybrid holsters that do like a leather with Kydex.
That's the worst.
You can see, like, there are times, like, yeah, maybe right away it's nice and comfortable, but over time, you see people where it's, like, because they've worn it so much, like, now that leather part starts flapping over, you can easily cause an ND or a negligent discharge.
So, leather holsters is akin to being a 1911 guy.
Yeah.
Two World Wars. Mm-hmm. So, if you run a 1911, it's not that the guns are bad, it's that they require more attention.
Mm-hmm.
To the same thing with a leather holster. You just got to be aware of it. You know, if you need to condition it, you know, whatever you got to do. But you keep in mind that holsters they're like tires. They're a consumable item.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
At a certain point, even Kydex, something on it is going to give up. If you carry enough, if you're using it enough.
Yeah, I actually had my Kydex. Phil saw it. Yeah. My Kydex holster from Tier 1 Conceal, which is a great, great company. Yep. It broke. It cracked. But great customer service. They sent me a new one 3 days later.
Yeah. So, but with a leather holster, you're just gonna have to be a little bit more attentive, because they can wear out, you know. So, but they are comfy.
Yeah, very much so. So I think the concept is find a way to carry that's comfortable for you. Talk to somebody that you know has that box of shame and then ask if you can see the box of shame.
Yep. Most gun people are super friendly. Yeah. They want you to carry a gun. They'll want to shoot with you.
Yep.
Oh, so, yeah. Like, dude, can I try out a holster? Don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Because they'll probably be like, you can have this one.
So true. Yeah.
After we're done here, I'm going to ask about the claw thing.
Unfortunately, as a lefty, I can't do that.
That's true. Right. We could.
I could. And I have. I've let people, like, hey, try my holster and see. And they're like, oh, this is actually not too bad.
Right.
So then they went ahead and actually rented that same holster. It's like, I like it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had one buddy who I recommended to rent a holster. He didn't. Bought the same holster as me. He hates it. Never carries anymore now. I'm like, bro, I literally told you. And he just dropped $140 on a holster. Mm. Holsters aren't cheap.
And don't be offended if you, assuming you're listening to a gun podcast, you're probably the gun guy in your group. Don't be offended when people don't listen to you.
I'm offended.
Yeah, just get over it. I mean, I didn't mean it that way. But like when you see someone at the range, you're like, oh, dude, I can help you. And then they're just like,
nope.
But look at my groups and look at yours.
Okay. Yeah, I know. They need to have that journey sometimes too. And they're going to conclude the same thing. And honestly, I know like Tyler earlier said, he's like, I just don't have like a lot of like firearms. And honestly, like there's part of me that's slightly envious in that space where I'm like, dude, I have so many firearms I don't use. Mm-hmm. And like I feel sad for them because they're just hanging out in the safe with their buddies, like, you know, getting neglected.
Well, like I've got the HKP30L.
Yeah.
Because it's the John Wick.
I was about to say John Wick, bro.
Yeah. I mean it's very accurate. It's super soft shooting. But I'd still take a Glock 17 over it. Yep. So I just you know, I like shooting the 17 more, or even the M&P or not M&P. The P320, the full-size P320X.
Yeah.
I would take that over it, even though the HK is almost twice the price. So.
Okay, so one of the more important things I would like to chat about real quick is practicing.
So before we go into practicing, which I do agree, when it comes to concealed carry, gun, pick a gun, ammo, of course, holster, but this is the fourth thing that most people forget: belt. Good belt.
Yep,
that is the foundation. So,
exactly,
because unless your shoulder.
Yes. So for the people who are carrying,
you gotta be like Tyler, just lift extra weight.
I know.
Right? Them shoulders.
Yeah. So, but very quickly, there are definitely great options out there. Because when I first started carrying, I was like, "Oh, Amazon got some cheap gun concealed carry belt." Hated it. It was flimsy, paper floppy, thin. Didn't work.
Yep.
Eventually, I got a Blue Alpha, a low-profile EDC belt. It was okay. I liked it, but it was Velcro, so it was just kind of hard to adjust.
I've got, I think it's the Deltac Force. It's the one James Yeager recommended like 6 years ago before I took his class, and my leather belt had finally died. So I was like, I need a belt. He recommended that one. I was like,
there you go.
It's not the most comfortable belt in the world, but mother goose, is it tough.
Oh, yeah.
It's basically conveyor belt material.
Yep. Which I get that. I mean, that's why eventually...
And if I run out of ammo, I can beat someone with it.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's heavy duty.
Yeah, you can just whip them right in shape. Yeah.
And eventually, I moved on to the Core Essentials belt. That's what I carry now, and I love it. Next belt is very similar to it. It's just a ratcheting belt where when I'm standing, I can easily micro-adjust to the right size I need. I did get a groove belt for Black Friday. It's okay. I don't love it. It works. It's really light. I might summer carry with it.
I think you're missing the most important part.
What's that?
That is one heck of a fidget spinner.
It really is. It's fun to it's a magnetic clip. It's together. A magnetic clip, so I get it. It's fun, but this will probably be if I am going to keep this will probably only be for suit carry since I am a pastor. I will be doing weddings and doing funerals. I will wear suits. I carry appendix. So this way I'll just attach my holster through Ulti clips connecting to my pants and then putting this over on top of it because it's a nice looking belt.
Yeah.
So I get it. So if I were to keep this, I don't know yet. I still have like 20 days to return it. So, but personally, I wouldn't get a groove belt. But there are great options out there. So yes, belt. So now that's my spiel on belts.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up because when I was writing the notes down for this, I did not include that on there, and that is a very vital part of not only keeping your pants up, but keeping your gun in a secure position, 100%. Especially when you draw and whatnot. So with practicing,
dry fire, dry fire, dry fire.
Yeah, that, yeah. So for those of you who don't know what dry fire is, it is practicing with the firearm with no ammo anywhere near you, typically within your house, or you're drawing the firearm, you're pressing the trigger without any ammo in the gun, hence the dry part of the fire, and shooting at targets. You know, people do in their basement a lot too, but getting that experience of like pulling from concealment and then bringing the firearm up, getting like your shirt out of the way, all those things, which Tyler does a lot of. So I'm going to kind of let him step into that here a little bit. So what are your thoughts on like practicing with dry fire?
Yeah. So just like what Philip was saying, always follow the four universal firearm safety laws. And that's where it's know your weapon and treat it as if it's always loaded. Make sure that you keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire. Don't point your muzzle at anything you're not willing to kill or destroy. And make sure you know your target, what's beyond it. So even when you're dry firing, I still follow all four of those laws. So this way, if for some reason that one random bullet is around me, yep, if I do end up having an ND, no one's going to get hurt. So that's why with dry firing, I try to pick like, okay, where in my home, this is my designated dry fire space. For me, since I am single by myself, no one's around, I can really dry fire anywhere I want. But I usually take another area of precaution, and I typically dry fire in my basement. Because now, if somehow I do have an ND, doesn't matter, I'm in my basement, no one's going to get hurt.
Your TV might bite it, but you know.
That's true. My TV might bite it, but... Yep, or something. But you know what? It's not that big of a deal. Because now if it goes through, it's just going to hit my foundation. It's going to suck for me for later. Granted, any ND is going to suck. But so with dry fire, there's that. I do, now that I have a shot timer, I bought that a little while ago. It's actually really nice to do that and practice with the par time.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is why I'm able to be like, okay, am I able to get... Realistically, if you have a sub 2 second draw, you're fine, because statistically it tells us lethal force encounters in law enforcement civilian context happens within 3 yards, within 3 seconds, within 3 bullets. So if that's the case, I want to make sure that I have a consistent draw that's 2 seconds or less. So with the par time, it's like, okay, 2 seconds, let's go. How good am I with that? How accurate? And then how fast can I go, and really try to push it and see how fast I can go. And eventually, once I get into the range, I'm like, okay, now am I really getting like that sub-second draw? I don't know. But now that I'm actually training with live fire, it's like, hey, no, the answer is no. Sometimes I can. I know there are great dry fire tools out there. I have a dry fire mag as well for my Shadow Systems. It works great. And then, of course, I don't have this, but I will eventually. You have the Mantis X10, which you can either attach to your the bottom of your frame where the light goes. What is that called?
The light rail.
Yeah. The light rail. Thank you.
Dust covered, but
I would say, yeah. I would say Picatinny, but
I know it's
Glock,
not.
Glock doesn't use Picatinny.
It doesn't, but to that rail over there, or you can actually attach it to the bottom of your mag, and it traces you. Like it'll trace like your draw stroke, how fast you're going, if you're flinching, the movement of your gun. It's really cool. I really want to get one. I don't know why I haven't, because it's really not that bad. I think in the long run it's like $200. So that's actually going to save me a ton of money over time, especially when I'm going to be more accurate with it. So I do want to get that. So with dry fire, I don't dry fire as often as I used to. When I probably dry fired 4 to 5 times a week. Now I'm maybe once a week. So
it's hard to find time. It's hard to find time. But a lot of it, I think, is especially when you first get the concealed carry set up, is practicing with that setup. That's to true. Make sure that you can get the gun out without fumbling it, without dropping it, without getting hung up in clothing.
Yep.
And doing so safely, obviously. And then if you have a lot of firearms nowadays, the safety is within the trigger mechanism, typically, like the Glocks have the blade, but if you have safety on yours, like there are some Smiths that have safeties, manual safeties still be like in them to make sure you can practice getting that off and whatnot. And then once you've kind of mastered that, I would definitely spending time at the range safely, again, practicing drawing from concealment and engaging targets at like different ranges, obviously with a lot of close-up stuff, because like Tyler was saying earlier, you're going to most likely be within a certain distance of like a fairly short distance of your attacker, right? Now, if there's a situation where, you know, if there is like a mass murder event going on, you may be required to take a shot at longer distances, way less likely to happen than a defensive situation where somebody's attacking you. But always good to practice those fundamentals as well to get out there. And then, like we talked about earlier, practicing with your defensive ammo, because a lot of times it is going to recoil more than like standard ball ammo, mm-hmm. along with that as well too. So,
so I don't know if I've told you guys this story or not, but most expensive bullet I've ever fired was $1,700.
What?
Yeah. When you dry fire, I know this is going to sound silly. Unload your gun, separate the ammo from you.
Yeah. Yep.
Go into a separate room. Before you draw, say, "I am dry firing," out loud, even if you're by yourself.
Mm.
Check your gun.
Mm-hmm.
When you are done, "I have finished dry firing." And then step out of the room. You're going to load your gun, holster it up, whatever you're going to do. I did a bunch of dry fire. Loaded up the gun, holstered it, sat down, I was watching TV, and went right back to dry fire.
Oh, no.
So not only did I shoot an $1,100 TV,
yeah.
I went out and bought a $600 TV that day, too. Most expensive bullet I've ever shot.
Wow.
Dang. Complacency, because when you're the gun guy, you become, sometimes you can become complacent.
Yep.
I know what I'm doing. It's that arrogance. Yeah. It's the pride. Yep. If I can do it, anybody can
do it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So,
I had a situation where very similar, where I did that. I was dry firing, and then I was done, and then I loaded my gun, and my brain was like, "I'm going to dry fire again." I forgot.
Yeah.
I drew. I aimed. It was in my basement in my old house. I was aiming in my window, and I had my finger on the trigger ready to go. I was like, "Wait a minute." And I dropped it open. I was like, "I have a bullet here." So I was like, literally, I already took all the mush. I was at the wall of my trigger. Mm-hmm. I was ready to fire. I'm like, that could have been really bad.
Yeah. I fully committed. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm
glad I didn't.
Right. No, but it's
honestly, like, I've had it too, where even I'm at the range, like where I am like firing and I go to unload and everything. Like, I think you and I were out once and I went to go take my firearm, and I intentionally went down to unload it. I thought that I had like dropped the magazine and then unloaded the chamber, but I didn't remove the magazine. So I just like racked my round into the gun.
Yep.
Fortunately, I got caught myself on that, but it was all aimed down range. And I was ready just to pull it. Because I always, when I'm done shooting, I always like propel myself away. And when I go back home, if I'm not concealed carrying that pistol or rifle or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
I always pull the trigger into the berm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I know that it's empty. Right. And I was like a hair away from like pulling that trigger.
Right.
And again, it's just having those things in your mind of like, again, if you're in your basement, that's one really great way, just in case something does go off, there's nothing in the way. You don't shoot. If you do ND, which you don't want to do, you're going to do into the wall, right?
For most people, that's something I encourage them not to do, is they'll check their gun and then pull the trigger. I was in a house. Actually, I saw my brother. He ended up shooting his hand, but he checked the gun, dropped the chamber, and then pulled the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing this, and
oh my goodness.
Shot his hand. So, check the gun. Do not pull the trigger. There's no reason.
Right.
Something. This. I know it's a semantic thing, but when you're looking in a gun, do not look for brass. In your brain, you'll say brass.
Mm-hmm.
If you see brass, you'll go, "Yep, brass," and then you'll send around. I know that sounds silly, but it happens.
Hmm.
So when you're checking the gun, you're looking for an empty chamber.
Oh yeah.
Words matter, and it matters what you program in your head, because your brain, when you're just doing something, you'll go on autopilot. Mm-hmm. Brass, yep, click, bang. And
which makes sense.
Now you're buying two TVs.
So even psychologically, it's true, because I know this is not a psychology thing, but you're about to get a psychology tip right now. But psychology.
Pastard.
I know. So
hashtag
about pastard. So 5% of our actions, feelings, and thoughts only come from our conscious mind.
Mm.
Our subconscious and unconscious make up of 95% of our actions, feelings, and thoughts. So that makes sense. So once again, now it's like you're already on so much in autopilot. Like, if you're just saying it's like brass, like, no, you really want to consciously say, like, I am looking for an empty chamber. I am dry firing right now. I am not dry firing right now.
Say it out loud.
Great way to put it. Yeah. I love that.
Feel dumb when you say it. Just get over that. Feel dumb. Build in redundancies. Protect you from you.
Yep.
And there's the reason, like, a lot of competitive shooting too. Like when you're like USPSA, it's unload and show clear. If clear, hammer down the holster.
Yep.
And they have you do those things. They have you those steps. So if somebody does not like properly remove the round from the chamber in the magazine, if they are going to have an ND, it's going to be into the berm again. So it's a lot of that. It's a lot of the simple things like keeping your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. And it's building a habit. Like it's when you're walking around the house with your DeWalt drill or your Milwaukee, have your finger like, you know, off the side of the trigger of the drill.
It's so funny because if I look around and I see like, he's a gun guy. He's filling up gas. I'm finger like, off the trigger, my man. Yep.
Gun guy.
Yeah, and a lot of that too, just getting into that habit when you're at the range, when you're at home, when you're dry firing, whatever it may be, and eventually it'll just be like, I always tell people, right off the bat, do that immediately. Don't even think about like, always when you're first doing it, finger off trigger, finger off trigger, finger off trigger, because it'll grow into just like second nature. You don't think about it.
I know.
And when you shoot competitively, and if you are running from point A to point B, you have to have finger off the trigger.
Yep.
Because you can get called for a DQ because they don't want you to ND while you're running and you accidentally catch the trigger or whatever. So it really helps you mentally just think about keeping your finger off the trigger, and a lot of problems can be avoided by doing that.
Find an index point on the side of that gun that your finger's familiar with.
Yeah.
So then, because when you're not touching it, it'll feel weird. You're like, I got to find that.
Correct. The default stance whenever you're holding a pistol should always be finger off trigger on the side of the gun.
Yep.
That should be more normal than having your finger on the trigger.
Exactly. Which is even why, like, I don't even like saying finger off the trigger. I like to say index your finger.
Yeah.
So index your finger on the frame.
Yeah. Yeah.
So because that's something that they did in our 101 class for our range. Like it's because they want to see light coming through your trigger.
Some guys will put it way up on the chamber.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Just right up there.
That's what they wanted us to do.
Right.
I mean, we don't do that, but
they don't see that. Like I went through RO training for USPSA and they like, one of the things that they did is they flashed up on the screen really quickly, like, was this person finger on the trigger or not? Because it's really hard to tell.
Oh, yeah.
When somebody's moving away from you or, like, at a weird angle or whatever, it's really difficult to tell. And you're trying to catch that, like, really quick. So it's up to all of us to be safe in that direction.
Well, speaking of finger off the trigger, another James Yeagerism. One of his things was every night, you know, if you're carrying, you got to take your gun off. So when you take it off, you know, safe direction, come out of the holster and present like you were going to shoot, finger off the trigger. Mm-hmm. But that's 365 reps for free. You had to take the gun off anyway.
Yep.
So it's just practice that, good fundamentals, solid coming out, and there you go. And then put your gun down or unload or whatever you do at night with it. I think most people, their EDC gun kind of becomes their home defense gun because they're usually setting it, you know, in a lockbox or they're putting it in the nightstand.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so kind of rounding this out real quick, any last thoughts regarding concealed carry that things we may not have covered tonight?
On topic, slightly adjacent, but remember guns are fun.
Yeah.
Like, go out, shoot them, enjoy them.
Yeah. Dad advice.
Yeah, there's definitely the seriousness to it, and if you make a mistake, I hope it's not an expensive one like I did.
Yeah.
But guns are super fun. Buy a .22, like go out, plink like crazy,
and take your kids out.
Take your kids out. Like they're super fun, and build a culture around positivity with guns.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be like serious doom and gloom, and that was the biggest turnoff for my mom and my sisters when I talk about like I'm carrying a gun because you know X, Y, or Z might happen and the ninja bears. So if you always present that front, the guns aren't fun. It's this serious nonsense. It's just meh. Right. But if it's fun, you're out shooting and it's hey, can you do the dueling tree faster than I can? Can you hit that? We're gonna set a pop can at 50 yards. Who can shoot it? Like, you start making games out of stuff. You know, just like with basketball, you play pig.
Yep.
Do it with guns.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Have fun with it. Build culture around guns. Be positive with it.
Yeah,
it's the Blue Falcon Challenge, right?
That's right. The Blue Falcon Challenge is where you challenge your friends to shoot guns that are very difficult in ways that they're not meant to be shot and to be goofy and silly. One thing I always used to joke at work is I would hear people that would do, like, sports, and they'd have, like, these crazy injuries or they develop some kind of overtime injury, blah, blah, blah. And that's why I was like, that's why I have a safe sport, like shooting USPSA.
Hmm.
Because, you know, obviously if there can be injuries, there have been historically, but yeah, everybody just assumes that, like, if you're out shooting guns, you're going to shoot yourself. But if you're out playing soccer, you're going to break a leg or sprain an ankle or whatever, and you're going to have a pretty serious injury, you know, as a result of it. But yeah, I get out and shoot, and obviously treat the firearm with respect. But then also, there is a lot of misunderstanding today with people that have never shot a firearm before. Mm-hmm. They make a lot of assumptions about shooting and how scary it is. And it can be. It's very nerve-wracking the first time you go out. Mm-hmm. And how difficult it is. It's difficult. Shooting pistol, mm-hmm. especially. It's a skill that you have to develop.
I was just born that way.
It's a danger. But getting out and like getting those people that may be on the fence, mm-hmm. to say, hey, come and shoot with me and we'll show you what it's like. And I've had people that have, you know, not necessarily agreed with like the existence and the reasoning behind the Second Amendment, who after that didn't go out and buy a gun. Like, I legitimately enjoyed this. Mm-hmm. I thought it was good. Now I feel like I have a Second Amendment. I should probably like flex that Second Amendment.
And that's not like, don't discourage someone's first time gun purchase. There was a guy, another gun store thing, but the dude wanted a Taurus Judge.
Yeah, you weren't being judgmental.
I was, but I didn't say anything. But and he had his friend with him, and his friend talked him out of buying that gun. Huh. Because, you know, it wasn't a Glock, it wasn't right. Whatever, I don't remember exactly, but it's like, that's what that guy thought was cool, and who knows if he ever bought a gun after that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You discourage him from the thing that he likes, but that gun could have led to, hey, you know, I'm shooting the 45 Colt and the Birdshot, you know, the Birdshot, I can't hit anything, I hit something with a 45 Colt, oh, I like hitting stuff.
Yeah.
And then he could have moved into, you know, a Model 25, Smith & Wesson, which is 45 Colt. Or he could have moved into, like, the 625, like Jerry Mitchell like, shoots a lot of competition with. He could have moved into whatever and then eventually got to a more practical 9mm mm-hmm. firearm or mm-hmm. something like that. He could have become a gun guy, but because he was discouraged in the beginning because his gun was stupid, you know, why would you take that from someone? You know, let them enjoy it. Let them go on their journey. It doesn't have to be yours.
Even if it's a high point?
Well, there's a line.
my
only if it's the $100 bill one.
My first firearm that I ever owned was a Mosin Nagant. Or a Moist Nugget.
Moist Nugget.
That's amazing.
Well, it was my first firearm that I owned.
Did you get the bayonet?
I got the bayonet.
Respect.
Yep. And it was funny because it was like at the time, it was literally the only thing I could afford. Mm-hmm. And the first time I had gone shooting with somebody, it was shooting like a Savage, original Savage Axis, mm-hmm. like hunting firearm in like 308. And I thought it was a ball. Yeah. So I went out online and I did a bunch of research because I work in IT and that's what I do. And I said, what is the cheapest yet reliable firearm that I can purchase and go out and shoot and enjoy? So I bought a Mosin Nagant. So had it out there, there's like posts on it in Facebook or whatever, and somebody was like, why would you buy that for your first firearm? And it was disparaging. And they were like, why would you do this? And I was like, I don't know. It was the cheapest thing I could find.
Yeah.
I didn't know a whole lot about everything else, but I had shot a 308 and I knew that the 54R was similar in that regard. And I took the time to remove the Cosmoline and kind of got to know it. I don't own that firearm anymore. I sold it to a friend.
Miss in the Mosin Nagant?
I do not miss it at all because I did, similar to your story earlier, Brian, I shot an AR-15 and as soon as I did, I was sold.
Oh, yeah.
So now I love shooting AR-15s. Super enjoyable. But I do have another bolt gun again, you know, and I do like shooting that.
I got my sister in AR, she loves it.
I do like shooting that again. So yeah, to your point, don't discourage somebody's initial gun purchase.
Yeah.
Because you may not think it's the right way, right. But you know what? They thought it was really cool.
I brought up cowboy action shooters earlier. If you're into cowboy guns, you like old Western movies, stuff like that, you can carry one. I've carried a bunch of single actions over the years. Are they as fast as some autos and all that? No. I'm not trained to the level of proficiency, but could I defend myself with one? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially if I'm running something like some Underwood 45 Colts. You're talking about a 255 grain bullet doing 1,000 feet a second.
Yeah.
That's we're moving into like taking on bear territory. Ninja bear specifically.
Ninja
bears.
Yeah,
like it's nothing to sneeze at, you know. Just because it's an old style gun doesn't mean it's not lethal.
Right. Tyler, parting shots?
So I guess I'm gonna go more on the serious side a little bit. And when it comes to concealed carry, once again, you're putting yourself in a situation where you might have to save a life. And unfortunately, we live in America where lifesavers are punished.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have done everything right, and you could end up like Kyle Rittenhouse, where now you're in the eyes of the public. They chose you and decided to just destroy you. Like, the dude still has legal fees to this day.
Oh, yeah.
And it's insane. And that's where, do your research, do what is right, and don't go looking for the fight, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to be defenders and protectors. And if you need to save a life, save a life. But there's a time where maybe, should you go into the action or should you retreat? That's where you're going to have to figure that out. Because I think if there's a situation where there's a shooting in Walmart, he went in. I mean, he was a hero, but unfortunately, he got shot from behind because there are two bad guys come, and he thought there's only one. He saw a lady, thought it was a good person, comes to find out she was a criminal as well and shot him and killed him. So there's, of course, that. And also you have, I'm like iffy about concealed carry insurance now because I think you should get it. But then there's situations where there was one case where I think it was USCCA where they basically denied somebody because in their opinion, they didn't think that it was a good shoot, even though every lawyer said it was a good and clean and justifiable defense.
I think it was actually the insurance company that said that was backing up the plan.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at it and they were like, nope.
Is funny because those policyholders are not lawyers.
Right.
And yet every lawyer who was on the case basically said this was a justified situation. Yeah. So that's where I'm a little iffy with it. I'm personally a U.S. Law Shield carrier. I like them. I started out with them because they were the cheapest, truthfully. They're very a la carte, but based off of my research, they're a solid company. Mm-hmm. But there are more and more companies coming out now that I can't even keep up with anymore. So do your research in that because behind every bullet is a lawyer.
Yep. And that's a great way to end a podcast because there's also behind every lawyer, there are some fantastic jokes. Anyway, so thank you all for listening. If you want to follow us on Instagram, we are Acceptable Accuracy on Instagram. We will, great way to reach out. We try to post some stuff up there. It doesn't happen a ton, but feel free to reach out, check us out there. Otherwise, check us out next week for our next podcast. And thanks for listening.